Welcome, everyone, to episode 4 of the Ringside Chat Podcast, talking about the back half of Halloween Havoc 1995. Joining me, as always, is Joe Kaczynski and the Avocado Kid, Court Montgomery.
Do we really have to do this?
No.
I'm way too sober this time to finish talking about this fucking show.
Whose fault's that? It's only Monday. You should have drank.
My computer apparently didn't want to talk about this freaking show because it restarted like freaking 3 times.
Between your computer issues and just everything else, so this was supposed to be one episode. It was supposed to be episode 2. We've made it to fucking episode 4 and still haven't finished the shit.
It's because you were drunk and talked about Disco Inferno for 45 minutes last episode.
Sir, I did not, but I did talk about Johnny B. Bad way too fucking much.
Whatever his name was. They all... the weird character that dances, shoots glitter.
Hey, you know that confetti gun was fucking awesome, and that's about it.
DDP's manager is pretty awesome.
I meant just Johnny B. Bad. I'm not talking about the match.
You talked about Disco Inferno, didn't even bring up the Dancing Fools tag team.
God damn it. But we got enough to worry about when we get there.
We're just cutting all this out.
No, we're not. I'm leaving this shit in. All of it.
No one listens anyway. We're all of our tens of listeners.
We need content, God damn it.
Still more than the Midwest folks.
Jesus Christ. All right, okay, let's focus now.
This is off the fucking rails already. This is
no, this segue's perfect because this is like Loose Cannon Brian Pillman going on. So there we go, Brian Pillman.
King Joe.
Woo! Brought it around town. Look at you. All right, so we left off last time with the phenomenal Ming versus Lex Luger match. So we'll go next to the only good match of this show, really, I think, which is Arn Anderson and Brian Pillman against Sting and Ric Flair. Now, the backstory behind this is Flair was in a feud with Hulk Hogan. Well, he couldn't beat Hogan, so he got Vader to help him out. Vader ends up losing the cage match to Hogan at Bash at the Beach. Flair goes in, tries to berate Vader. Vader gets pissed, fucking attacks Flair. Flair has Arn to help him. This leads to Clash of Champions 31, Arn and Flair wrestle Vader. Well, they lose, and Arn and Flair blame each other. This leads to a big match later on, which leads to Brian Pillman joining up with Arn Anderson and attacking Flair. So it's 2-on-1 for weeks. You know, Flair is trying his best, and nobody will help him. He goes to Savage, and Savage won't help him. Goes to Sting, and Sting's very hesitant, doesn't want to help him. So 2 weeks before this show, on an episode of Nitro, it's scheduled and announced to Sting and Flair versus Arn Anderson and Pillman. Just Flair comes out. By himself, Sting nowhere to be found. Doing his thing, trying his best, until finally Sting comes in, makes the save, and he says to him, okay, I'm sorry, you're right, I see you need help. Halloween Havoc will beat their ass. What's really weird about this is Sting is actually in 2 different storylines at the same time. Sting is also in the middle of the fucking Lex Luger and Randy Savage Dungeon of Doom shit, which I thought was weird because that's not mentioned at all in this pay-per-view, which is normal WCW bullshit. But what the fuck are you gonna do?
I thought the build for this was very convoluted. Like, they went so far out of their way just to find some babyface to fuck with, when ultimately, at the end of the match, which, I mean, the turn was done excellent. I mean, I think that they couldn't, even though you could see it coming a mile away, that the turn was awesome. They did all this just so they could get Sting in a match and 3-on-1 attack him. That seems like a lot of work for something they could have just did on their own, but I don't know.
Well, maybe nitpicking. This whole show is a series of convoluted storylines, so we shouldn't be that surprised.
Or no storylines at all, just random 2-minute matches thrown together.
Very true.
Yeah, super fucking true. And honestly, too, it gets really weird to me, and maybe it was done on purpose. Not going to give them that much credit. Sting has already fallen for this shit before. Like, in 1990, he joined the Horsemen, and they kicked his ass out and fucking fucked his leg up. Like, I don't know.
I mean, I'm all for the baby faces, you know, getting swerved by the heels or things of that nature, but I don't know, maybe it's just me, but to me, early WCW and even a little bit Jim Crockett Promotions, it seemed like some of their top baby faces were the biggest freaking morons when it came to working with, you know, people that used to be heels or the people they used to feud with. And Sting was one of the biggest ones with that. At least until he turned into the Crow.
Even WWF, like, it's a bad booking thing a lot. I mean, you don't see it as much anymore, but you still see it. That baby faces are just too trusting or forgiving, and sometimes without explanation. I mean, hey, I just had a blood feud with this guy. Oh, he turned babyface last month? Oh, he's cool with me.
Yeah, I totally agree. It happens way too often, and it just makes them look stupid. So I think that's part of the reason why, now more so than ever, because you have so many quote-unquote smart fans, that they have trouble building healthy baby faces now because, no, the way they're portrayed is that they're dumb and they fall for the stuff that they should see coming a mile away.
I think it hurts Sting, too, as far as really being WCW's top babyface. I mean, a lot of people remember Sting as he was all here. You think WCW, you think Sting. You go back and look, man, honestly, Sting's run was shitty. He never really had the ball, for the most part. They made him look so bad as a whole, man. Like, Sting got a real raw deal.
Yeah, I would say he got a raw deal, and I think that at times, and I mean, we could talk about this in probably a few trips, I think at times, even somebody like a Luger got a raw deal at times.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Like, Luger ended Hogan's super long reign after he was Hollywood Hogan, won the title. You know, fucking, Luger wins the belt on Nitro and then immediately just loses it back to Hogan at the pay-per-view the same week. Like, what was the fucking point in it? You get that big reaction and just take it immediately away. But that's a whole other era of fucking bullshit booking.
I think you can blame a lot of that on Hogan, probably because of the creative control and everything else. I don't know. Well, that's WCW's fault for allowing him to have that, but right. I think a lot of that is just Hogan's own ego.
That's true. Well, anyway, we've talked a lot about everything but the match. The first thing I thought was kind of weird, you guys probably didn't pay attention to, Sting was actually the U.S. champion. No sign of the fucking belt tonight. He didn't wear it at all. But if you're the champion, I would think you always have the belt with you. All right, on to the match. You know, you have Flair is injured, so you know, Sting's doing a handicap match, which is kind of the opposite of what they just did 2 weeks ago on Nitro, where Flair was in a handicap match. I thought Sting still, they at least had Sting look very strong. I'm not going to give WCW booking any credit for that, but I'm going to give Arn Anderson and Brian Pillman credit for that. You know, Sting is kicking ass, house of fire. One thing that I thought was really cool is that they had really convinced the fans that Flair was still an ultimate babyface. There's huge, we want Flair chance. Up until before he gets out there and then after he gets out there to come make the save, you know? One thing that I really like too, one of my favorite spots of the match, Pillman is trying to climb up the top rope and Sting does the catapult to Arn Anderson right into Pillman and Pillman crotches himself. And then as soon as the heat starts, here comes Flair to save the day.
Did anyone find it weird that he was, in dress clothes?
I mean, kind of. I guess they tried to make it really seem like, hey, Flair got his ass whooped. He's been in, you know, being helped by the trainers this whole time. He came straight from the trainers against doctor's orders. Like, I'm guessing.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay, I can see that now.
That's the only thing I can think of. Again, not giving WCW booking any credit for that shit. That had to have been, a Ric Flair idea, you know, something. One thing I hated was Sting's fucking selling. Like, he would get up, at one point, the whole time he's trying to reach for the hot tag to Flair, and Flair's trying, and Flair's extra babyface. Like, he's not he is over the top. Which, kind of, to me, really alludes to what's gonna happen, because Flair's never this much of a good guy. Sting just gets the fuck up and, does the Mortal Kombat sell while he's trying to fucking tag Flair. It's just fucking reach out. He's not even extending his arm. Don't insult my intelligence that much. You're not trying. Hot tag. Flair comes in. What did everybody think about fucking Flair after he gets the hot tag?
I thought that whole sequence was tremendous.
Yeah.
That's classic Ric Flair. playing with the crowd's emotions, and then, wham, nailing Sting. And, I mean, it was something that everyone knew was going to happen, but even in that moment, just watching it through was exciting to me. It was very well done, and the beatdown was great, and the interview that preceded the match was awesome, I thought.
When you watch today's current product and you see things like this, it doesn't sometimes come off that well, but watching it here, like, it was pretty refreshing to see this. And wow. I also really enjoyed the way all three of them got after Sting. And really wish that this would have been a bigger run of, like, Four Horsemen with these three.
I loved it. One thing, too, was that, you know, they do the interview afterwards. Did anybody notice that the fan throws that fucking cup and Arn Anderson just perfectly catches this son of a bitch?
Because Arn Anderson is a badass and yep. The most underrated wrestler of all time. One of the most underrated talkers of all time.
Toot, toot.
Could have been a world champion. I can't say enough positive things about Arn Anderson. He's probably my favorite worker ever. I think he was really the glue that kind of held the Horsemen together for years. I know Flair gets a lot of the credit, but I don't think that group is nearly as big without Arn Anderson in it.
I agree. I don't think that even when you had the different incarnations, you still needed to have Flair and Anderson. I mean, Ole leaves, Tully leaves, you have Wyndham, you have Luger, you have all of those. To me, Arn Anderson is the Four Horsemen. And, I love him.
Hell, if it wasn't for him, they would have never even had the name the Four Horsemen. That was his promo that made them say, okay, we're the Four Horsemen now. Mm-hmm. You know, so, yeah, and Joe, you said really what I was about to say is that, you know, always people think Four Horsemen, they think Flair, but who was also in every single version of the Horsemen? Even when he got hurt and was out, he was still there in, like, a managerial aspect, or at least like he would show up every once in a while to help out with the Horsemen. So it kind of says something about Arn too, that not like you said, not a lot of people give him credit for.
One of my favorite things that he does in promos is when they finally throw to him, and you know, he does that famous line, I don't like to toot my own horn, but toot toot, I just love it. That's all you could say, and I'm done.
Everything he did was so believable. That DDT, that spinebuster, all his punches, everything just looked so crisp and clean. He's right up there. Him and Malenko are like neck and neck as far as like the best workers, in my opinion, that I've ever seen. Just making everything look just crisp and clean and just believable.
And it's such a shame, too, that Malenko came around, at least when he finally got his big chance, right at the time when Arn was leaving the business. You didn't really see much, I can go back and look. I don't even think that Malenko and Arn really ever even had a chance to team together in the Horsemen. Wasn't Malenko added? No, he was added after Arn was out. Cause they added Mongo when Pillman left, right?
Right.
So, that's a shame, man.
Yeah, this kind of led to the, end of the Horsemen, at least the classic years in my eyes. Cause I think, shortly after this, once Flair and Anderson and Pillman kind of rejoined each other, I think Henning was the next one to join, and then he turned in that awful NWO angle at Four Games, and then they ended up putting Benoit in, which I thought was a perfect fit for the group. I mean, if anyone could kind of, I mean, and I mean this with the most due respect, if anyone could fill that enforcer role, it would have been Benoit at the time, not knowing what he ended up doing with his family. But
right.
But I actually didn't mind, and I thought Malenko was another great fit for that group, too. I did not mind that iteration of the Horsemen. I didn't like Michael in there. It didn't make any sense to me. He felt like the odd man out.
Yeah.
In that. But as far as Flair, Benoit, and Malenko, I thought that was a solid group. Like you said, it would have been a shame if Arn could have been there. If Arn was healthy enough to be in that group, I think that could have been like one of those dark horse candidates for one of the strongest Horsemen iterations.
Well, if you listen to Shivani's podcast, I mean, they tell you that Mongo was only in there because he's friends with those guys, but also because he basically partied like a Horseman. I guess it didn't matter; he was not a good worker. But I'd much rather have the Benoit, Malenko, Four Horsemen, and the one with Mongo in it.
Honestly, I would have been okay with Penning staying in it. I never understood the whole turn in that War Games match. It didn't make any sense to me. I think Henning would have been a perfect fit in the Flair, Henning, Malenko, and Benoit. Horseman would have been awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was just a situation where, like, I don't know if it was Hogan's call, Bischoff's, whoever. They wanted, it really seemed like no one could say no to the NWO. And I think that was part of a big reason that hurt the company as a whole, because it just seemed like the NWO could buy everybody. And they tried to make the bad guys look way cooler than the good guys. So how are you going to build good baby faces if the bad guys are the coolest people in the company?
And that's a problem that still goes on now. I mean, that's been a problem since the NWO and DX and those groups where those cool heels were kind of introduced. It's really, to me, has harmed the product in a way where fans kind of gravitate towards them, and it can just be a societal thing too. And it's really hard to get over as a babyface now.
Well, you even look like, and I'm not trying to jump ahead, but you even look like when Arn Anderson retired and the NWO come out and did that skit mocking Arn Anderson and Flair and them. You don't have the Horsemen come out and get their heat back. And then even in that War Games match later on, you have Flair handcuffed to the cage getting basically destroyed. And for what? Why would you get it would be a natural fit to have the NWO challenge the Four Horsemen or vice versa. And that should have been what led the charge for WCW to defeat the NWO. But no, you'd rather just kill it all.
Yeah, honestly, that's all they did. They decided instead of making that a big deal, they just immediately killed off the Horsemen. And that's a huge mistake. I mean, we can all say that in hindsight, but even then, somebody could have seen that shit, man.
When you have 20, 30 guys in your main heel group, I mean, it kind of waters down its effectiveness anyway. And to me, just adding guys like that, like Henning, and then they added Norton and Buff and all those guys. Even that war, and not to go back to that War Games match, it's not on here, but it's kind of tied to this, is that they had like the C squad in there for that War Games match against the Horsemen, which to me brought down the Horsemen even more. You didn't have Hall and Nash and Hogan and your top guys from the NWO facing the Horsemen. Yeah, I think it was Conan, and it was just, I mean, nothing against Conan, but I mean, in the hierarchy of that group, he was not a top guy.
Well, that's one thing I'll say about the Four Horsemen outside of when they brought Paul Roma in. The Horsemen were very selective of who they brought in, whereas the NWO just, it was anybody. And that's one thing I liked about the Four Horsemen is all the guys they brought in were fantastic workers, with the exception of Mongo. And I mean, Roma wasn't that bad of a worker, but he just didn't fit. But yeah, it was, that thing was definitely very diluted.
Well, before we get to the next match, Mike Tenay does an interview with Lex Luger, and it's fucking terrible. Like, I think Luger, I really felt like he had no idea what was going on or what he was supposed to say. Because I know they kind of, he doesn't need to be too babyface because of what we have to happen later. But I felt it was extra bad even for Lex Luger's promos. Because, I mean, he didn't have the best promos.
That's the problem. He didn't know if he was babyface or heel at that point right now.
He was like that period of time's Big Show.
I was just about to say that.
He turned like all the time. I always preferred him as heel. I never really got the appeals of him as a babyface. I thought he was a decent heel. I never really had a problem when he was a heel. Even the turn, I mean, that's really the highlight here of this back half of the show, other than what we just talked about, was his turn in that main event. I thought was well done. I mean, it got convoluted because Toilet Paper Man came out and tried to buttfuck Hogan, but I mean, we'll get
there.
To that. Yeah.
All right, well, to the match we've all been waiting for. It's the Monster Truck Sumo match. Okay.
Like, when you're spitballing, like, in the booking thing. How we're going to get to Hogan versus the Giant. Who just raises their hand and goes, I want a fucking monster truck. Like, that screams... That screams, like, big time. Like, I would think, like, let's put it in a steel cage. Let's, hell, barbed wire the fuck out of the ropes. But nope. Monster trucks.
I think it didn't make sense with what they were trying to do, where they were trying to eliminate that Southern wrestling image. And not to say that monster trucks are Southern wrestling, but monster trucks are very, to me, as someone from the North, and Joe, you can disagree or not, monster truck screams Southern.
Oh, big time. Big time.
Mobility stuff to me.
No, it definitely does.
I like monster trucks. I liked them when I was a kid, and that was cool. And I mean, they really flipped the bill for this and got Bigfoot, which is like the monster, like the Hogan equivalent of monster trucks. But yeah, to me, it very much regionalized this part of the show. And it doesn't, I mean, and other than the fact that it was completely stupid and useless.
The only saving grace of this, and fuck the whole what happened, is we did get the best video package of the night telling you the backstory of Hogan and Giant, which I thought was great. So they showed Giant's debut, which I want to touch on this, you guys, for a second. So the Giant is the son of Andre the Giant, right? So do you remember how he told Hulk Hogan and he proved he was Andre's son?
No.
I'll tell you why. No. I'll fucking tell you guys. The Giant shows up, and Hogan looks at him. He's like, who are you? The Giant takes off his white shirt and throws it in Hogan's face. Hogan holds the shirt up and goes, this was Andre's shirt. How the fuck do you know that? Like, was it his shirt from The Princess Bride? What the fuck?
Anybody like a peanut?
So yeah, so that's it. That's Andre's t-shirt. Well, goddamn it, he's his son.
You know what I was thinking about was you watch like the build up for WrestleMania 3 with Hogan and Andre, and you have that great segment on Piper's Pit, and then you get this as the build up to, and it's like, I would have loved to have seen what an Andre the Giant Hulk Hogan match with monster trucks would have been.
Why not just replicate that whole segment, the Piper's Pit segment? It's not like WCW was above doing that. I mean, they did it 2 years later when they tried to replicate the whole Warrior-Hogan feud from WrestleMania 6. So why not just replicate that, him ripping the chain off and Hogan's chest is bleeding and stuff like that? That, to me, would have made at least some sense, and you could have made that connection. Okay, he's related to Andre. He's doing the same thing his dad did.
Actually, funny you say that. It's very, like, this will tell you how WCW just, I guess, tried to rush through things. So, you know, Hogan goes to the Dungeon of Doom or whatever, right? And blah, 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 blah. He's going through, and the Giant is revealed as the one etched in stone. He actually does grab Hogan and rip his fucking chain off. But they don't put any fucking emphasis on that at all. So you didn't even know it fucking happened. And they showed the shit. Because they just go through it so fast trying to get their point across. And they fucking show Kevin Sullivan and Drag beating them down with a cane. Which was wonderful. Don't get me wrong. You know, Shay,
so,
go ahead.
So it kind of falls just on their shitty production. Been a problem with their entire run. They had terrible production.
Honestly, shit. Even the good old days of WCW, Crockett, whatever. Yeah, you're right. And they're showing the whole setup for the Yeti, which, again, I'm going to get really angry about. So if you're trying to put over the Giant, that's the son of Andre, he's this bigger-than-life character. Number one, why is he, and they really put this shit over, why is the Giant a master at driving monster trucks? If he's the Giant, why the fuck do you need a backup in the Yeti? But that's WCW.
If he's a Giant, then shouldn't that monster truck just be a truck to him?
Boom. There it is.
There you go.
There it is. So, one thing that I also thought was kind of shitty was Eric Bischoff just fucking kicks Tony Schiavone off the fucking announce team.
I noticed that too. I'm like, well, wait a second. So you kick Tony out, for your one, basically in air quotes here, your biggest segment.
Oh yeah. And I guess, I don't know, but you know, they bring in him and they bring in the Bob Chandler, which, you know, we've already mentioned was the guy that built Bigfoot. And Bischoff says the line, "This is the most anticipated match in WCW history." And that's a direct fucking quote.
Yeah.
Nothing like shitting on years and years of tremendous in-ring action.
Yeah, let's throw out all the classic matchups from the 80s and up at that point, early 90s. Good.
Let's just talk about these two monster trucks banging each other on top of the roof.
And it's really not even wrestling.
It's not even monster trucks. They're like welded together and they right. spin in circles. They do donuts. I had never seen this before. I watched this shit for this show. I for some reason in my head, I thought they had like pushed. I didn't understand how they were connected together and all that. I thought he had pushed the monster truck off the roof,
yeah.
which I, right. would have been infinitely cooler, but obviously, logistically, would have been a nightmare. But I was so disappointed. I mean, I'm kind of jumping ahead. I was so disappointed when I saw how hokey it was when Big Show's doing the whole big swing in his arms thing and, like, falls off the roof.
Yeah.
It was so
But
bad.
What got me was when I heard of this monster truck thing, I thought, I sort of figured that they were going to run into each other or something. I didn't realize that it was going to be a fucking tug of war with a fucking chain that was welded to it.
And it's so obvious they're working together the whole time. There's
right.
no struggle. They would just, let's go forward, let's go back, let's go. It was the most boring shit. One thing, too, this is very, very subtle that I noticed. At the very beginning, they have that kind of boxing UFC-style standoff where the fucking guy's explaining the rules to this shit like there can be any more explanation than they're welded together, fucking push them off the side of the building. Did anybody notice how lost Hogan was? Like, he's sitting there, and he's looking at the referee, and he's kind of looking at Big Show, and he's looking at, like, he can't even fucking pretend, like, to follow along. You're just pushing each other back and forth. So, you know, they're kind of slow, kind of playing off a little bit. Bobby Heenan, again, with his great one-liners that he's hit all night, says the phrase, "We always expect Hogan to be slow, and he's never let us down."
I just sit back and watch some of these old WCW shows and feel so bad that Heenan wasted the last portion of his career in this company. Like, he had to sit there, and I mean, I'm one of the biggest Bobby Heenan fans you're gonna ever interact with. But, and he half-assed it when he was in WCW, and I don't blame him because the product was so fucking terrible. But, I guess I shouldn't be too upset because he probably got paid ridiculous. But just sitting there and having to listen to him try to call this bullshit is insane to me.
It's so bad. And he tries his best to take it as seriously as possible, but it's so bad. And I think it's great, too, because Bischoff is trying his best, too, right? He's like, oh, this is great. This is whatever. The fans are going crazy. No, nothing. There was not a single fucking chirp from the fans.
And that's
not
see,
a
that's,
damn thing.
That's what I had a problem with because, you know, you find out down the road that that Bischoff has an issue with Schiavone overselling things and things like that. I thought freaking Bischoff did everything but drive the damn monster truck himself to get people to freaking get into this thing.
I agree.
And there, outside of giving the pay-per-view away for free, there was nothing that was going to get you excited about this.
No. Even that wasn't going to work.
And this is something that I kind of picked up from listening to Schiavone's show about WCW in general, and this kind of goes back to the production, is they never did, like, crowd reaction shots, and I never really understood that. I didn't even really catch WWF doing it at the time. But going back and watching some of these older shows from this era, WWF always had those reaction shots and those big moments of, and they do it now, and it's one of the best things that they do with the one guy when the Undertaker lost, and the Brock Lesnar guy, and the Miz girl, and all those things. Those are all great, but WCW never did that. I'm sure it was dead silent for this monster truck thing, but I'm sure you could have found one jabroni kid losing his mind over this monster truck that you could have cut to for half a second and kind of drive the point home that the crowd's going wild over what's going on, or hell, go back to the Arn Anderson tag team match and find someone cheering and screaming then. They don't fucking know that it's not from that same time. And make it look like people are actually excited about this bullshit that you're trying to pull on everybody.
Well, shit, just add in the audio. Just pipe in some cheers. Pipe nothing.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things that I found alarming is, now this thing only went 5 minutes exactly.
It felt like 20.
Right, and that's the thing, like, if you're... I mean, I don't know if this was live or if this was already pre-taped and they were just airing it.
It was taped the night before.
Okay. So you do that, and you're wasting time on a pay-per-view, knowing that you're already going to give, I think, the Hogan giant match at the end, and it went, like, almost 15 minutes.
Oh, God.
Why not shave 3-4 minutes? Make this real quick. Get it out of the way, and then hurry up and go, that way get back to the pay-per-view. Because now you got people sitting there for... You know, I'm sure it was longer than 5 minutes, so they could cue everything up to do this. If I'm sitting in the crowd watching this, I'm like, all right, I'm ready for this to be fucking ever.
You're asking way too much out of WCW.
I know.
Where is the part that Hogan gets arrested for murder?
Well, he doesn't, because he magically survives a plummet off a fucking skyscraper and comes out and wrestles a 15-minute match. It's amazing.
God. So...
Well, wasn't it a big topic this week on Twitter about dives? I mean, the Giant just took one.
That's true. Oh, yeah. So, you know, they really hype this shit. Like, oh my God, it just fell off the side of the building. They're all doing their best to sell this as serious, especially, again, fucking all the credit to Bobby Heenan. He's trying his best. This is my favorite. I know I probably said this more than once, but honest to God, this moment is my favorite moment for the whole fucking pay-per-view. Bobby Heenan is very serious. And he's going off, and he's like, he asked Bischoff, what side of the roof did he fall off of? The water or the street side? And Bischoff, in all of his fucking wisdom, says, well, you've got a parking lot and you got a river. What's the difference? And Heenan, very obviously, drops his fucking glasses and just face palms in frustration. And it was just, I just applauded Bobby Heenan. I'm like, this is great. He couldn't even act through that shit. Like, it was, he just got pissed off at Bischoff. It's like, fuck it. I quit. I'm done.
He probably should have looked over at him and said, this never happened with Monsoon.
But those types of things, and I'm glad you kind of picked up on that, happened all the way through Heenan's run in WCW. And I'm going to get to it when we get to the Toilet Paper Man. Because he takes him to task, too, in one of his later iterations.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Shivani comes back in, and then Shivani just starts hyping the rest of the card, and Bobby Heenan's like, what the fuck are you doing? Man, just fell off the roof. And he leaves for, like, a grand total of 10 seconds, comes back, and then, okay, let's get to the next match. During the entrances of this next match, Bobby Heenan then just gives the fuck up, and he goes, see? All of this is because of Hulk Hogan. Let's go to Lex Luger versus Randy Savage.
Oh yeah, I forgot about
that match. Oh yeah. Don't forget, these motherfuckers won qualifying matches earlier.
Oh yeah, that's right. It's the King of the Ring for
the Dungeon.
This match only went 23 seconds longer than the Monster Truck match.
That's amazing.
Yep.
Wow. This match really suffered because the crowd just didn't give a shit. But two, even watching it from a pay-per-view standpoint, you're not paying attention to the match. You're just paying attention to all Shivani and Heenan are talking about is what has happened to the fucking Big Show. What's the main event going to be? So I really feel like you could have put, I don't know, in one of those random throwaway matches we had earlier in this position, instead of putting what was supposed to be a huge big feud ender here. Because, you know, you have fucking... Jimmy Hart comes out for no reason. And none of it makes sense. You know, they did a big clusterfuck thing at the end, and Savage hits, and I'm doing air quotes, you know, Jimmy Hart off the apron, which he's like a fucking mile away from him, and Jimmy Hart just takes the bump. This match is just boring.
I think they would have been better served to have this, have the monster, to not help ruin this match, but put the Monster Truck match, say, like, after Savage and Zodiac, or even after the, maybe even the Luger match with Ming, to give it a little bit of time to build this anticipation up that he's going to come back out. Because you're right, I think it hurt, the crowd hurt the Savage Luger match. While it wasn't great by any means, you could tell the crowd was just like, they're probably asleep. Or,
oh, yeah.
Or contemplating that, like, oh, should we call the cops? I mean, a man just died here, you know.
Right. Yeah, we're all just not paying attention to, there's a man that's dead here. But, and then they're still talking about how it's going to be a main event, which kind of gives it away to me. Well, they're saying, oh, well, we don't know what's going to happen. Motherfucker, like, bullshit. Don't insult my intelligence. But back to, like, so they're very taking it very seriously. Bobby Heenan's trying to figure out what's going on with the Giant. Shivani just randomly stops selling Giant's death. And he literally says how amazing the monster trucks were, and we have changed the business. Exact quote.
Oh, they changed it, for sure. They made it shittier, so mission accomplished.
Right. So, WCW, everybody.
Yeah, right. So, okay, Savage wins, unfortunately, whatever. I love Randy Savage, but this match just had just no... I liked the fucking Zodiac match better than I did this.
Yeah.
So
they could have just cut those two fucking matches out and just had Luger and Savage for 15 minutes. I'm sure Savage could have drug Luger to a good match.
Oh, absolutely.
He did 4 weeks before this on Nitro. They had a singles match 4 weeks before this, and it was decent. It was passable at least. Shit, they had a match at fucking World War III the next month that was not bad.
This show is just a wreck. I mean, from top to bottom, it is just a hot mess. Like, there is so much just filler and extra bullshit, and so many guys not used, and people used twice instead. It's just a hot fucking mess.
But at least somebody won a motorcycle.
That's true.
Yeah. Todd Pettengill.
Todd fucking Pettengill. So, after this match, you know what we show a replay of? The Giant dying. Let's just show a... Like, to me, that showed the hokiness of this shit. You need to fucking treat it like... This is serious. We're trying to get an update on him. Not, let's show a replay of this man falling off the building. Like, you're not even fucking trying anymore, guys. Like, you're insulting everyone's fucking intelligence worse than you should. And, to top it off, let's cut to Michael Buffer in the ring.
I'd like to know, you know, first off, why even go through all of this to throw the Giant off the building or whatever. There are so many other things they could have done. Hell, Hogan could have picked up the monster truck and just thrown it at the Giant, for God's sakes. That would have been a little bit more believable than what I saw, and he's going to come back. I mean, the man didn't even have, like seaweed all over him coming back from the freaking thing. Like, it's just, ugh. And then they paid like $6,000 to get Michael Buffer to say like four things.
God, yeah. I don't know about the whole, like, I appreciate that era and yet Michael Buffer around, but it just seems like, again, it takes away from the seriousness of what they're trying to get the point across, you know? So they bring in fucking Buffer and he announces the Giant, the fucking dead guy. Hogan, you know, comes out, tries to cut a promo, talking about how he didn't want this to happen. Blah, blah, blah. His pyro even fucking goes off. And he's...
No one wanted this to happen.
Right.
That was not even...
Right. So, but... Guess what, guys? No selling death. And decently dry is the fucking Giant.
Before we get there, Hogan should have came out and said to eat your vitamins, say your prayers, drink your milk, and please do not commit manslaughter. That should have been his promo.
Well, I want to know what vitamins the fucking Big Show was taking that he could survive a fall off a skyscraper.
Winstrol's a hell of a drug.
At least, like, take a shower in your gear before you come out. At least make it look like you fucking fell in the fucking river. Like, he just comes out fresh as a daisy.
You know what, Court, then? You've already answered your question. It was the parking lot side. That's the side he hit.
That's it. Okay.
Maybe the Yeti gave him a hug and all that toilet paper sucked up all the water.
Or maybe the Yeti fucking caught his ass. No one thinks about that shit.
Maybe. Oh, shit. There you go. You solved the riddle.
Jesus Christ. So, and then, Shivani, in all of his fucking wisdom, it completely monotones, huh, he's risen from the dead. Direct quote.
Unlike the crowd.
Right. They're not fucking rising for shit. One thing, at least we're going to give them a little bit of credit. I am, at least. When Hogan takes off the fucking bandana and he has, like, the fucking Taskmaster eyebrows painted on, it's like, I appreciate them trying to show, like, Dark Side Hogan. To me, it made no fucking sense. But at least someone tried here. Right?
I guess. Probably should have used that same makeup and painted on a friggin' mustache.
He did later with that's
true.
When he was in the NWA.
Solid. That's true. But yeah, so, I mean, any kind of notes for the match? It's not really a lot. It's just your typical Hogan versus a big guy match.
John was so green at that.
But honestly, even if for it, like, I've always thought it was his first match. From what I read, it was his second match. They made him do like some little indie or something beforehand. He was not bad. I mean, you're not going to do so much with Hogan anyway, especially as a big guy.
No, I mean, I think he's had, well, he obviously had a longer career with the WWE, but I always thought the WCW, outside of something like this, I always thought WCW did a good job with him. And he probably had better matches in WCW compared to what he had with the WWE. That's just me.
What I don't understand is, and we bitched about other matches being way too short, and why did they even bother to have them if they're 90 seconds long? This is a guy that you clearly want to build up as a monster. He's fucking huge. He's impressive looking. And he just fell off a building and survived. And you still had him go almost 15 minutes with Hogan.
And get his ass whooped a lot, too.
Yeah. Why wouldn't you just have him just fucking demolish Hogan? I mean, I understand because of the ending and stuff, but he should have got a lot more offense in.
Even with the fucking ending, you still could have had it happen. Have a big fucking giant win. Maybe cue in like Sting and fucking Savage or whoever to come save. And they can still do the whole bullshit ending after a clean finish. But I mean, as much as I've loved Hogan my whole life, this is Hogan bullshit. He can't even put the new fucking big monster over. I mean, fucking, I don't know, man. He does give him a little bit, but I don't know if anybody noticed. Giant goes for like a fucking suplex. And Hogan's like, nah, fuck that shit. And makes him whip him off and like to like some like awkward slam. Then he gives him a back elbow. And Hogan doesn't even bump for his fucking back elbow.
I don't understand. And the reason why the Giant's even in this match is because Hogan fucking politicked for him to be in it. Because he saw how big he was and got a boner thinking about Andre and all the money he probably made from that Mania 3 match. And that's why they rushed him into this feud already. I just don't get it. You could have had a match that was 5 minutes long, had the Giant just have a ton of offense, completely dominate, even after falling off a fucking building, have Hogan do his Hulk up thing, and that's when you do the fucking DQ and all the bullshit and schmoz at the end. And it would have been, to me, way more effective, would have made the Giant look like a bigger beast than he already did, surviving a murder, and I think ultimately it would have been a better thing, and you could have given matches like the Sting and Flair match, or some of these other matches, or some of these dark matches that we talked about last episode, some time on the main show. That would have made more sense to me. That would have been a better use of time, but, I mean, it is WCW, and Hulk Hogan can pretty much do whatever the hell he wanted at that point, so I'm actually surprised the Giant won, even by disqualification.
Right.
You bring up the disqualification. That was one of the things that I found annoying about this match. I'm a fan of Jimmy Hart, especially Memphis, WWE. But I don't know. I always got annoyed with it with him as the manager of Hogan, and then you have him interfere in this match, only to change it. You know, then on Monday Nitro. The next night, or 2 weeks from then, or whatever, it just,
I don't get it, man. Like, from the get-go, like, bringing in Jimmy Hart as Hogan's babyface manager was so weird. Like, I get that's your buddy, but Jimmy Hart as a babyface is not something I can get behind. I can get behind Jimmy Hart as a heel. He's a fucking annoying little shit with a megaphone. How can you not hate that? How can anybody enjoy that? I mean, honestly. But one thing too that kind of pissed me off in this in the match was that they bring up WrestleMania 3. They don't mention the show by name, but it's mentioned. I think Shivani mentions it, that the Pontiac Silverdome in front of 93,000 people, and he body slammed Andre the Giant. When you're trying to push yourself as the number one company in the world, or even trying to push yourself as a serious wrestling business, you don't name drop the competition. Whether bad or good, in my personal opinion. I fucking hate that, man. Like, just go with your own. People already know the story. We've already mentioned Andre the Giant by name. That's enough. We don't really have to mention this specific event.
Or if you're going to do that, you can do it, but then don't have him battle Hogan in a fucking monster truck.
Yeah.
Do something that can top
I think it gets mentioned because they were... I think this is prior to them winning the ratings war, and even before that really started. Maybe I'm wrong, but I tend to see, at least history dictates, when you're in second or third place, you tend to bring up the competition more than when you're in first and you ignore the competition. And Eric, as we've learned in recent history, had such a boner for kind of wanting to put WWF out of business, I could see why he would keep bringing them up and why this is better than WWF and all this other bullshit. So,
right. No,
clearly wasn't.
And one thing, too, that I thought was funny. So Bobby Heenan actually name drops both Eddie Guerrero and Sabu during this match on commentary, saying you're not seeing great moves from guys like those, but this is still a great match. Bullshit.
I would have killed for that.
Right.
I think that's just a passive-aggressive thing on his part just to kind of slam the bullshit that was going on.
Yeah, that's because I put in my notes, nice try. Like, he was trying his best to put it over, but not even Bobby Heenan in his infinite wisdom can do this. I've already bitched enough about the Giant and how he's supposed to be this big, huge heel, and he's your big new monster, and he's been killing everybody with a choke slam for months. And what do? Have Hogan kick out of it. Because why the fuck not?
To steal a gimmick from another show, Hogan must pose.
That's right. Hogan must pose and fucking kick out of everything. Like, let's just shit on the new monster's finish immediately. Even so, Hogan kicks out and he starts to Hulk up. You can even see around this time, the fans are tired of Hogan's bullshit. Like, he does not get a big pop off of this. Like, he's beating the shit out of the Giant. Which the Giant does some amazing Mortal Kombat selling. Like, he's still green, I get it, but he is just fucking dazed and groggy, and he's slowly rotating in a circle, and...
I can remember the ordering pay-per-views, well, not this one, but, like, ones down the road, that when Hogan would face the Dungeon of Doom, and even, like, the Saturday night shows and stuff, and the fans just friggin' eviscerating him on the shows and stuff, and it didn't seem like the fans didn't get behind him until the NWO. To watch this, I was shocked that nobody threw shit into the ring, especially after he kicked out of the chokeslam.
I don't know, man. Like, I don't even think the fans gave a shit at that point enough to try to do something like that. And two, like, okay, so we talked about on the last episode how the camera work was terrible and they missed the Sheik's fireball, which, to their credit, no one knew that shit was happening. They completely miss Jimmy Hart's initial heel turn when he clocks the referee. And that is a huge fucking moment for this match.
Absolutely. Again, the production is terrible, and that's, I mean, as much and fun as it is to shit on Kevin Dunn and everyone in podcasts and on the internet do it, I mean, he is good as far as catching those moments and making sure that the storyline that's being presented is driven home to the viewers. WCW, I imagine, didn't have anyone like that. And it comes through in their product. I think especially in this pay-per-view, a lot of these key moments that may have kind of elevated the product and kind of driven the point home were missed. And that Jimmy Hart turn was really the highlight of this match. Not only is he turning on his friend Hogan, but he ends up bringing Lex Luger in, and he turns on Savage, and there's a lot of pieces in there, but missing that first part is key and kind of dulls the moment.
Well, like I said, you know, earlier, you know, we could probably talk about it, the aftermath. Like I said, you don't show it, or you don't see it that well, only to renege on the issue on Nitro and stuff. by saying that there was a clause in the contract that the belt can't change hands on disqualification.
Which I don't even know if they knew that was the fucking plan to begin with, because it gets so convoluted here. Before we get that far, you know, just fucking so what saving grace of this is fucking the Giant. Because did y'all notice that he's dead, right? He fucking just got the big leg drop from Hogan. And all the bullshit's going on, and he peeks his head up to see what's going on, and plays dead again. Peeks his head up, and plays dead again.
What I found was funny was he stayed down longer for that leg drop than he did when he fell off the building.
Yes. And so, speaking of like rushing things and missing things, you know, you have Savage and Luger run down for the big save, and like Jimmy Hart cocks him with the belt. But that really had to be explained to me because it happened so fast, it was so convoluted, I didn't even see it. It all felt rushed. I mean, you have this match last, what was it, like 15 minutes, you said, something like that, 12?
Yeah.
And
15, 14, 30.
And I don't know if they're running out of pay-per-view time or what. You have all this happen, you rush all this shit just to get to the fucking Yeti.
Old toilet paper man.
Woo.
Comes down and just butt-fucks the hell out of Hogan.
Well, it was
bang, bang, oh, doom.
Well, this is a shitty show, so it's only fitting that it ends with toilet paper.
Now, here's a little fun fact for you guys. So, it always bothered the shit out of me that the fucking Yeti was a mummy for no goddamn reason. Do you know why he was a fucking mummy?
No.
All right. So, Ron Rees was the guy that was playing the Yeti. That was never the plan. He was never intended to. When you think of the word the Yeti, and not wrestling related. You think of the Yeti. What do you think of? Bigfoot, right?
Yeah, big hairy beast.
Right. It was supposed to be Giant Gonzalez.
Oh, God.
The whole time. Because, and if you go back and look, you know, he actually did at least one or two spots on Thunder in Paradise with Hogan. So this was all a big plan to bring in the Giant Gonzalez. They couldn't call him that because that was WWF. Had the same gimmick, the whole hairy fucking deal, and he was going to be the Yeti. There were some visa issues, so they couldn't do it. So the plan was, we have another big guy who's going to be debuting later as Super Giant Ninja, and we'll just wrap him up like a mummy. Right. Big Ron Studd, Rees from the Flock days. We'll just unwrap him later, and it'll be fucking Giant Gonzalez. And the shit just never worked out. And that's why you only saw the Yeti once as a mummy.
How great would that have
been? No explanation given.
How great would that have been? You see him unravel that toilet paper off, and he's got the airbrush muscle suit on. That would have been fantastic.
Honestly, it really would have been. Fucking, so Buffer, you know, they did a whole shit. Luger puts him in the rack. They fucking gangbang Savage, and he puts Savage in the rack, and it's announced that fucking the Giant wins by disqualification. But, and it's plainly said, but still the champion is Hulk Hogan, and the Giant steals the belt. So, I always remembered that the Giant won the fucking title here. So I was very fucking confused. It wasn't until, not the next night, but the fucking, so two Nitros later, is when they announced that that was the fucking clause in the contract and the Giant was a champion. Like, how fucking convoluted do you have to make things? Then they immediately strip him of the belt, and Savage wins it at fucking World War III.
Yep. I honestly don't think they knew what they were doing. I like the clause in the contract. That makes a lot of sense to me. That's a lot sneakier and makes a lot more sense than even the Flair-Anderson term in that match. But yeah, to wait that long before you reveal it makes no sense and leads me to believe they had no clue what they were fucking doing.
Oh yeah, no, I'm completely with you. Like, I really think that there were actually, I could be wrong. I don't think they had planned on giving him the belt. They wanted him to still win, so he wins by disqualification. But then they come up with, well, we can do this, get the belt on him, but we'll just take it right back off of him. I like the clause, too, but what is the point in doing all that just to get to, oh, we're going to strip him of the belt, though? Then he does.
It makes no fucking sense.
Then he doesn't get it back until, like halfway through next year.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, fucking Savage wins it in World War III, and I think Flair wins it at Starrcade. And it's... That's another thing kind of pisses me off, too, in the aftermath of this. So, of course, there needs to be a big Flair Sting feud, right? It lasted 1 month, and he's moved the fuck on.
We're trying to apply logic to things that are completely illogical, and that's why we're getting frustrated. There's no semblance of a story or an idea that's going to make this seem okay.
Yeah,
A 7 foot tall Yeti just doesn't walk down your street either?
And that's why Bobby the Brain Heenan, when he was in the Big Ron Stunt gimmick, wrote a gigantic article basically burying fucking Ron Reese and how shitty it was that he was choosing Big John Studd's name, even though he was his trainer. And again, another way for Heenan to kind of take pot shots at the product and get away with that.
I can sort of even get behind that, because, you know, Bobby managed Big John. So I could sort of say, like, oh, okay, well, Bobby just doesn't approve because, you know, he trained him and stuff. But, I mean, if I'm Bobby Heenan, I would have already taken Okerlund out to the bar halfway through this pay-per-view to go get a drink or something.
How do you know?
I'm sure it did. It should have, because, good Lord. And that's why you probably seen Bobby drinking, you know, in 97, 98 at the shows and stuff. Just good Lord.
Oh, yeah, Gene was slipping him double whiskeys all night.
I mean,
did you know what happened with the Yeti after he got released?
He went back in his snow peak?
No, he ripped off Big Van Vader's gimmick and went to Japan under the guise of Big Bomb Jones.
Holy shit.
Yeah,
wow.
He was there for about a year, basically doing what Renegade did with the Ultimate Warrior in WCW.
Well, what he did in this pay-per-view was a big bomb.
Yeah.
And like,
that's probably why he had all the toilet paper.
And fucking by the next, like I said, World War III, you have the Yeti, who hasn't been on the fucking TV, and he's a goddamn big giant ninja.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what's so funny is that, you know, they put a lot of clout, like, I don't know if you caught the advertisement for World War III, where they made it a point to say there were going to be 3 rings, 60 men, and 3 giants. Okay? They were banking on it being the Yeti, not Ron Reese, but Giant Gonzalez, the Giant, and Ron Reese as Super Giant Ninja. The original from the get-go was to make this fucker a ninja, but they heard it, wrapped him up in toilet paper to do this gimmick. Well, shit with Giant Gonzalez doesn't work out. Well, they're like, alright, we're gonna bring in fucking Loch Ness, Giant Haystacks. Okay? Well, fuck, he ended up not making it in time. So I guess Hogan was just the other giant. Like, it's all kinds of bullshit. Like, they build all this shit up. They don't even have the guys under contract yet they're trying to build up.
Again, WCW being WCW.
I mean, this Ron Reese, he had a stellar career. You know, he's part of Raven's flock, and he does the Big Van Vader gimmick, and then he even took part in Vince Russo's Christian-oriented wrestling product.
Yeah, evil, I think.
And he lost to Joshua the Carpenter. Can't make that up.
All right.
Tag teamed with Glacier and Dusty's promotion. Turnbuckle.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah, he had a one hellacious career. He'll probably be in the WWE.
Which is surprising that the WWE wouldn't have at least picked him up for something, because the man's 7'2". So you would
That's
think
true,
that,
man. I mean, he had a good look to him.
You would think Vince would be like, oh, yeah, he's perfect. Let's bring him in.
I actually didn't hate him in the flock. I thought he was a good fit for the flock.
Yeah, I agree.
So I didn't mind that run. Well, but, he was just, for someone so big to be jobber fodder is mind-boggling to me.
Well, let's go through I'm going to do a quick run-through real fast of most people individually that wrestled tonight and kind of what happened to them somewhat shortly after this pay-per-view.
Witness protection program.
Yeah, that's possible. So let's go to the first match, which DDP and Johnny B. Badd. Like I kind of was bitching about last episode, Johnny B. Badd held the TV title for the most part until he left for WWF by March. DDP, the very next month, ended up losing Kimberly to Johnny B. Badd. Fuck Mark Merrow, because that motherfucker steals everybody's woman. He stole DDP's, then he stole fucking Sable from Triple H as soon as he went to the WWF. So, goddamn homewrecker.
Well, joke's on him. Lesnar stole his woman.
Exactly.
He must have one hell of an avocado.
That's right. That's right. So, shit. Alright, so the Zodiac would go through a few more character changes and stay in WCW pretty much till they closed for the most part. He'd be the booty man with the booty babe fairly soon. and then would wander off and become the disciple. Randy Savage would feud with the Dungeon of Doom, and, you know, mainly Lex Luger, then with Flair, and would continue to be Hogan's best friend until the, you know, the NWO changes the wrestling business. Hawk stayed around a little bit until Animal showed up. And they stayed for a second, but they ended up going back to greener pastures for Vince. Kurosawa would be there for less than a year. This was like, this is his only pay-per-view win, and then he's like, hey, we're three, and that was it. He was on the B shows, but shit, he's still, to this day, wrestling. Kurosawa is actually Nakanishi. Some people might not know that. So, thought that was neat. I honestly never put two and two together, didn't realize that's who that was. Sabu would be gone from the company in less than a month, be back in ECW by November. Jerry Lynn would stay in WCW until 1997, believe it or not, before jumping to ECW. He was fired while injured, which was kind of Bischoff's MO. Barbarian would be in WCW soon, so Ming would change his gimmick. Still stay in the Dungeon of Doom. They had the Faces of Fear, which was pretty awesome tag team. I'm not going to say the matches were five-star, but watching them beat the shit out of everybody was kind of fun. So, you know, Luger's had the big heel turn. But it was weird. Luger had a very weird story after this, because him and Sting would win the tag team titles in January for Harlem Heat. And this is the only instance that I can really remember, at least around this time, where you had babyface Sting and heel Lex Luger as a tag team. They were not feuding with each other. They both stayed babyface and heel, but were best friends. They tried, WCW at least tried to experiment with that. There was some weird moments. Luger eventually turned back babyface, and yay, Luger's a good guy. Fucking Pillman, Anderson, and Flair would, not too long after this, add Chris Benoit and create Four Horsemen. Until, of course, you know, the infamous Loose Cannon, Brian Pillman, the whole situation with Sullivan, and he works himself out of a contract, and, you know, history's there with that one. Sting very famously reinvents himself about a year or so later. And no one remembers anything besides the Crow gimmick, unfortunately, for the most part. And, yeah, so, I mean, we pretty much know what happens to, you know, the Giant sticks around in NWO for a little bit, goes to WWF. Hogan pretty much gets WCW shut down with the NWO. And, yeah, that's, and for the most part, that's, along with this fucking pay-per-view, is, really sad. All of that.
Yeah, all of it's terrible. I still struggle. I mean, I understand why they won as many weeks as they did in a row, since the ratings war became a thing, because the NWO was super hot, but, I mean, a lot of the shit they did was just, even in their peak years, was just fucking brutal. If they would have had anyone competent, and they didn't have that bullshit clause, creative clause for Hogan, and guys like that, they would, I still think they would be around today. There's no reason why. There's plenty of talent out there that could have supported another major promotion.
Well, even if you just, because I know it was brought up on, I think it was Bruce Pritchard's podcast last week or what, but even if you say WCW just ate shit for, you know, after 96 and 97 and built up guys like Benoit, Jericho, Malenko, Guerrero, and all those guys, and let them become what they eventually became in the WWE, there's probably a good chance, you know, they're still around. If not, maybe, you know, stick it to the WWE, you know, later on down the road when you know, the Attitude Era kind of cools off a little bit and stuff. It's a shame that Bischoff likes the older guys.
I don't even know if he liked the older guys. I think this Bischoff was so concerned with stealing anybody that Vincent made to get WWF out of business. That's what hurt him. He didn't give a shit about match quality. You know, he brought in so much great talent, man, but it's like you said, Gary, with Hogan's bullshit, like, clause in his contract, and I'm pretty sure, I think Hall and Nash also had those clauses, which, yeah. I mean, hey, look, Scott Hall is one of my favorites of all time.
Mine too.
And no disrespect to those guys, they were just trying to make money and make themselves look good. I get it. But that's WCW's fault for doing that. And they didn't even have, I've heard them say that, like, Nash and Hall would have come into the company without that. They just offered it to him, so they used it to the best of their fucking advantage.
Right, and at least Hall has admitted, I think he even admitted on his DVD. I don't know so much about Kevin, but I know Hogan did, but Hall very rarely exercised that clause in his contract. I mean, I remember him, I think he lost to Jericho or it might have been Kevin, I can't remember, but I know he was willing to put talent over that he saw. I mean, he did that way back in the WWF with Waltman.
Right. He's smart. And that's, they made a ton of money. There's no denying that. And I don't blame them for taking that, what was offered. But I feel like there was so much money left on the table for all those guys to make if they would have done some of these little things to put some of these other guys over and build up new stars so that you would have people to wrestle so you don't have to wrestle the same two or three guys 40 fucking times a year and people get bored of it and the product fucking suffers ultimately because of that. I just never got, I mean, I guess it's all ego and you kind of become addicted to winning and those types of things, but ultimately you have to give some and plant those seeds so later you can kind of harvest. Like we talked about in this main event, had the Giant came in and just looked like this fucking world beater, instead of going 15 minutes with Hogan, when Hogan inevitably conquers him later on, it makes that moment more special, instead of, okay, well, the first match was kind of 50-50 anyway, so it's not a big shock that Hogan can beat him, instead of just him beating this fucking destroyer that came in.
Yeah, they could have had him, like you said, just destroy him. Hell, if you want to even, like, rush it, I would have waited to maybe even, like, Super Brawl, but fuck it, let a Hogan beat him at Starrcade, get the belt back then or something. You know, which, well, I don't even know what the point was, because Hogan wasn't even in the fucking title picture anymore after this. So why not just put him over clean if you're not even going to be in the fucking title picture?
Right.
Let shit marinate. Those are the things that really stick out for me when I look back at these shows, even in their peak years. Just little things like that that they could have built upon that could have kept them alive. I mean, just think about all the under talent that they had, all the younger guys that they had, the Jerichos, the Benoits, the Malenkas, the Guerreros, all those guys went on to WWF and WWE and had huge successful careers and were there for years, and some of them are still there now, still doing tremendous things. Those are guys that could have been WCW guys had they been built properly and given those opportunities there. To me, it's kind of disappointing, and I think ultimately, as much money as Hall, Nash, and Hogan made in that era, not only did they leave a lot of money on the table, but I think they ultimately put a big black mark on the business, and where it could be now could be so drastically different if they could have pulled back a little bit, not been so focused on themselves and their own ego and that need to win and to constantly be on top and give some back to the rest of the roster. I honestly believe WCW.
I think that's where you got to give at least the WWF some credit when it comes to somebody like, say, the Giant. Had he gone, I mean, WWE was in on it. They were just a little late in getting to it. And I think that if you bring him in and let Vince work with him, I think he would have had, while I like some of his matches in WCW, I think he would have been huge at that time with that machine behind him. Whereas WCW, all they had to do was either not let him get touched, or not sell, or something. And then let him beat Hogan, and then let Hogan get his back down the road, and you would have had a humongous star. Kind of what they're doing with Braun Strowman and stuff. But no, let's shit all over him, and then if he fails, we'll bring out the Yeti, so it's okay. We got a backup plan. And it's terrible.
I don't know if it's just overexposure in the modern age, but, like, as much as they like to put the Giant or, you know, Big Show as this monster of a man, which, I mean, he is. He's fucking bigger than life. People will never look at him like they did Andre the Giant.
No.
I don't know if that's because of how he got brought in like this. You can blame WCW or just the modern era, the TV era.
I think
he's overexposed, you know?
I think it's a TV era. I think it's overexposure because you look at the, you know, when Andre was coming, you know, was working the territories. I mean, you'd have him for maybe a few weeks, and you wouldn't have him again for, you know, a year or a couple months or something like that. And even Vince with Andre, when television, when, you know, he started getting cable TV and stuff like that, he wasn't on every show. And, you know, he didn't make that many appearances. He was still going to Japan and stuff, and he was still doing other things. But, yeah, nowadays, because of the internet and everything, I mean, yeah, he was less special.
And I think that's another problem, too, is, like, we think about all these guys that, I mean, even as bad as the showbiz, we have a lot of these guys that we see, we consider some of the greatest of all time. But it's because we didn't have them shoved down our throats all the time. That's one thing that I think kind of hurts wrestling to this day, and that people get tired of this guy or this guy. And it's not because this guy is any less good. Like, I'll give you a perfect example. My current age, people got soured on Dean Ambrose really fast. And I think it's just unfortunate because it's only because he has such a huge following and he's on TV every single week. You take him off TV a little while, you bring that specialness back, you know, which, but I guess there's a way you really can't do that too much in the modern era because you got to get all the stuff out of these guys. So that's why I think that we look at wrestling differently than we used to, because you weren't used to seeing, like, okay, perfect example. Let's look at Hulk Hogan and his prime in the WWF. Even though they had weekly television, he's not wrestling every single week. You might have a promo or just like an old video clip or something. We're spoiled, man. We're all so fucking spoiled, but it's just how things have changed.
If you got Hogan on a Saturday night's main event back in the 80s, that was like, you weren't leaving the TV for that. Cause how often did you see him wrestle on TV at that point? Outside of a pay-per-view? No, I get it. I mean, now you see John Cena wrestle on every show, including the house shows, a pay-per-view, and somebody will post a dark match that from the, you know, the show the night before that he was wrestling on. So you get, and that's why I'm glad that some of these wrestlers leave for a couple months and then come back. It's like, just go away.
I honestly think that's why Cena in the last few years has been more universally appreciated by the fan base, is because he's gone away and done movies and done different things, and you kind of, the heart grows fonder when you're away type of deal. And when he does come back, they still do the Cena sucks and they sing along to the song. But it's more like what they do with Kurt Angle where they sing along with the song. It's more in appreciation than what maybe someone like Roman Reigns gets now, where he gets universally booed except for a spackling of children and females.
Yeah,
pretty much.
One thing I did notice too, when you look back at this show, you have your fans of Hogan, you have your fans of Savage and Sting and stuff. But what I like now is you look at some of these, you know, people, fans that are older, you know, in their 40s and 50s or whatever, and they look back at a show like this and they're like, hell yeah, you got Ric Flair on this card, you got Arn Anderson, you got Brian Pillman, you know. Maybe even Sabu, fuck yeah, count me in on this one. And those are the ones that I get excited to go back and look at more so than, I gotta see the Hogan wrestle again. Or I gotta see, even, I mean, I love Savage, but yeah, right. I mean, I've seen enough Savage matches, I'm good, you know.
And I feel so bad, because like, I consider Savage, he's absolutely probably at least my top five favorites of all time. So every Savage DVD I've ever gotten, I don't bother watching most of the WCW stuff. I mean, it's not even because it was necessarily bad. It's just because I have such a sour taste in my mouth from WCW as a whole. And what they did, it's just, I'd much rather watch Savage in 85, 86 wrestling Bruno at a house show when Bruno is way past his prime than watch fucking just about anything. Like, the only things that stick out, let's talk about Savage specifically, from WCW, like, he had a pretty cool series with DDP. He had some pretty cool matches. But even that is like, I don't know, whatever, you know.
I'll thank him for bringing Gorgeous George to WCW. Give him that.
That video was great, though. Sorry. Good old days.
No, I agree. I mean, I own the two Savage DVDs that WWE came out with. And yeah, I do skip a lot of the WCW matches. And, you know, I had to go back and check because I don't remember because I didn't start watching the product until 95. But I forgot Savage, you know, did win titles in WCW. I just, because I just didn't care. I mean, the NWO is what brought me back to watching WCW as a kid. And even then, I mean, that's when he started doing his old madness thing and stuff. And I just didn't care.
Yeah, it's only certain things stick out in WCW Savage for me. It's like, you know, whooping that fan's ass and climbing into the cage at, like, Halloween Havoc 96, I think. Fucking, I remember the DDP series because it was just outrageous. I remember him and Dennis Rodman fighting into a fucking porta potty in, like, 99, I think it was. Like, and I hate that because I think about all these classic matches he had. I just think about funny shit in WCW. It just does not complement his career at all.
What about the porta potty incident with Kevin Nash and stuff, where they were dumping waste into the limo and stuff?
Remember that.
Oh yeah, they did that, and I think it was 99 99, because it was just on the Between the Sheets, where it was an angle between Kevin Nash and Randy Savage, where Kevin Nash brought that sanitation truck and dumped all that sewage into the limo where Savage had all them girls and stuff like that. And all the girls are screaming, and Savage is selling that it smells like shit and stuff. And yeah, I do remember that one.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's WCW shit.
I think that's WCW in a nutshell. Shit being dumped.
Big old Cleveland Steamer on the business.
So what are we going to talk about next week?
Well, there's a possibility of a special guest in there.
Yeah, I believe we have one of our fellow Ringside Chatters, Stan Sharp, is going to be stopping by, and we were going to talk about the 1995.
Right.
Which has many colorful characters. If we're going to talk about shit.
Come on, Stan.
Yeah, if we didn't have enough of 95 on the WCW end, let's go to the cartoon-ass WWF. Which I'm not gonna lie, like I'm excited. Like I'm not gonna say there's a lot of good matches, and I am really tickled to bring up SummerSlam 95 again. So, you know, we've got all kinds of wonderful people. I mean, we've already brought up Isaac Yankem. You know, we've got, you know, there's all kinds of great ones that we can bring up.
At least like WCW just built like one big shitty one. You know, with the Yeti. WWF, they just said, we'll spread the shit, you know, we'll spread it all around, we'll paint a baseball, face paint on Brooklyn Brawler and everything.
We can see where Bray Wyatt stole his gimmick from with Waylon Mercy, and we can, talk about all the animals that were brought in, like the Portuguese Man of War and Mantar.
Oh, I love Mantar.
I forgot about Mantar.
Brad Radford.
Oh, yeah.
All the fun shitty things that they had.
The hobo-looking Santa Claus that Court had to send me the other day.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a good one. I mean, even we don't even necessarily have to narrow it down just to 95, or you know, we talk about just guys that were still there, like the Smoking Guns. They've been around for a little while, but that was hokey as hell. You know, you've got all kinds of great options, you know. So I'm excited, and I'm sure there's a few good things mixed in there, too, but I'd much rather talk about the funny shit.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I will admit, I mean, for all the, you know, 9 or 10 things that the WWF did shitty in 95, I mean, you still had, you know, Nash, you still had Hall, you still had Bret Hart there, The Undertaker and stuff. I mean, there's still some good stuff there.
And yeah, I'm looking forward to it, especially having someone else into this fucking mixture of a damn, I don't even know what to call us. Yeah. That's very fair. That's very fair. Well, yeah, so I guess we can wrap this up. Guys, please, you know, go check us out on Facebook. You know, we've got the Ringside Chat group. We bring anybody in and wants to come talk shit with us. Go like us on Facebook. It's the Ringside Chat Podcast Network. Twitter is at Ringside Pod. Go find our shit, download it, and delete it. You don't even have to listen to it.
Just please download it. Please.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, that's the big thing.
We get so many likes and not
subscribe
enough.
Subscribe if you
can. Subscribe, please. We get so many likes on Facebook, and like, only half of them have listened to the fucking show.
Right. I mean, I'll admit, I mean, I don't like to re-listen to myself again, but at least I will take the RSS feed, put it into my iPhone where the podcast stuff is, so it downloads it the day Court releases it, just so we get the download. If you want to listen to it, fantastic.
We really do want to grow this thing. It's something that we want to make kind of, we've had Ringside Chat as a Facebook group for quite a while now, a few years now. It's really starting to grow. Lots of different people, lots of different opinions, very respectful, I think, in regards to the varied opinions and discussions that we have on there. We want to bring it and make this a community thing, something that we kind of all build together and not just Court Joe and I. So that's why we're bringing Stan in, and we're going to have a few other special guests, and we're working on some other things that we can hopefully bring up to you here in the coming weeks. So really, any downloads, any comments, good or bad, would be appreciated. You can post them in the group, send it to us on Twitter, hit us up on our personal Facebook pages, whatever it is that you want to do. We're always looking for suggestions on topics to talk about or things that you want to hear about. Try to make it semi.
I'll steal a line from Arn Anderson here. Not to toot my own horn, but toot. I'm a part of a lot of wrestling groups, and I think ours is the most active. And I mean, compared to the numbers of most of the other Facebook wrestling groups and stuff, I mean, we're shy under 300, but it's strong, you know, under 300. So I definitely think that, you know, you guys give us more positive feedback and stuff, and, you know, we'll release more shows, we'll do more things and stuff. So it's all up to you guys. We like doing it, so we'll give it to you.
I think we can really make it something that can be special for the entire community and get our voices out there and have some fun with it. And ultimately, that's all I'm looking for, is for something fun to do with the people that we chat with on Facebook across the country, or really across the world. We do have a lot of international members as well. So I'm looking forward to see where this goes. But if you can support us in the meantime with a download, with a like, or with a review, subscription, really anything, I think that would be a big deal for us. And we always are appreciative of any feedback we get.
Right now,
and honestly, if you want to, if anybody has any ideas, like say you don't want to come on our podcast, if anybody has an idea for a podcast of their own, come to us. We're looking to make this grow as a whole. It doesn't have to, none of us even have to be involved. If you just want a place to host one of yours, please talk to us. We want this to be a big community. It's not just us.
Absolutely. I mean, hell, right now MLW is the big fish in the pond. I mean, why can't we be like a Ring of Honor?
Or ECW. Yeah.
I was going to say WCW, but, you know.
We're ECW. We're just 93 ECW. No one knew what the fuck we were yet.
Yeah. We're the little indie that could.
Yeah, we just need to write Shane Douglas to shit on some big promotion, and then we're good. We're off fucking sit and say, oh man.
Listen, if you want,
if we can land Meat Sauce Man, I think we'll be.
Yeah, goddamn it, Virgil. I know you're listening. Come on the show.
I mean, I got $25 I can kick out to you. That's what the fee is. I mean,
that's too much.
Well, I think that little package we were talking about putting together for him, I think will be enough.
And you know what? I just happen to have a fresh $50 Olive Garden gift card. I could easily go out and spend it and leave $8.25 on there and give it to you. I'm willing to do that.
That's good for a soup and salad combo. You're good to go.
That's what I think. Yeah, I mean, Breadstick Mania. Go ahead.
We even drag out the fucking ending, guys. This is why we don't get views.
I want to listen to us fucking ramble on for.
Listen, the show ended for a lot of people when the monster trucks were being talked about. They said, "Fuck, we're done. Peace out."
The show ended after episode one for a lot of people.
Probably.
They're like, "What the fuck is this?"
Bye. The next time we do something like this, and I'm just going to throw this out there, I know we'll probably do a poll or something. I already want 1988, the Royal Rumble.
Oh, God, no.
That's the one I'm backing my, you know, that's my horse, that's who I'm backing. That show is terrible. If you don't believe me, go back and watch it. Nothing better than watching Frenchie Martin cheer on Dino Bravo lifting weights.
Yeah, you say that. You wait till they vote on Heroes of Wrestling.
That one I might be sick of.
I'm still on the XPW bandwagon. I want an XPW show to be reviewed, preferably the one where Vic Grimes almost gets legitimately murdered by New Jack.
Well, I've seen that one guy's wife, and I kind of want to review a show now.
Oh, shit.
Scotch bar.
Yeah.
I'll make sure I have a couple more beers in me than last time.
Well, guys, hopefully, until next time, if there is a next time, this is Court for Gary and Joe. We'll see you later.
Later.
When I was just a boy, everybody told me what I should do.